With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
A new trade agreement between the U.S. and Japan, signed on Thursday, opens major opportunities for American agriculture while reshaping tariff rules between the two nations. Deal requires Japan to expand U.S. rice imports by 75% under its minimum access scheme and commit to annual purchases of U.S. corn, soybeans, fertilizer, and bioethanol, including fuel for sustainable aviation. Altogether, Japan will add $8 billion a year in U.S. ag purchases. For farmers and ranchers, commitments mark one of the most significant ag gains in years. Corn and soybean growers could see steadier export demand. Cattle producers stand to benefit from increased feed grain sales. Rice farmers will gain expanded guarantee access to Japan's highly protected market. Japan also pledged to buy U.S.-produced commercial aircraft and defense equipment, but the ag provisions are expected to deliver some of the most immediate benefits to rural America. The agreement offers stronger export demand for U.S. grains, rice, and biofuels, potentially supporting farm gate prices. However, farmers may watch how quickly Japan implements its commitments and whether other trade partners adjust. Beef prices breaking from seasonal patterns this fall as tighter supplies drive wholesale values higher. According to Dr. David Anderson, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension livestock marketing economist, beef production has fallen more than 10% in recent weeks compared to last year, shifting normal price behavior. Typically, beef cut values ease after summer grilling demand fades. This year, reduced slaughter lifting prices instead, ribeyes surging to $14.72 per pound, over $3 higher than just a few weeks ago, tenderloins from $15 to $18.65 per pound. Chucks also gaining, climbing to $6.50 per pound. Only exception has been strip loins, which declined slightly in line with seasonal trends. Ground beef prices continue firming as cull cow numbers tighten. Pork supplies also lagging, keeping prices stronger across ribs, bellies, and hams, though loins and butts have softened. Beef producers could benefit from stronger wholesale cutout values heading into fall, a reversal from the normal seasonal decline. And with input costs continuing to rise, more farmers turning to soil conservation practices as a way to lower expenses while improving long-term productivity. According to a new Ag America Lending report, conserving, repairing, and rebuilding soil health not only preserves topsoil, but also provides measurable cost savings over time. More than half of U.S. farms now use minimal or no-till practices, making reduced tillage the most common conservation method. Farmers who adopt conservation systems report longer soil lifespans, reduced erosion, and lower fertilizer and equipment costs. Soil testing, another low-cost, widely available tool, often $7 to $10 per sample, sometimes free through state programs, and it helps farmers tailor nutrient applications. And when combined with precision ag technology, farmers can apply fertilizer more efficiently, cutting back on unnecessary inputs and reducing runoff. It's Agriculture Today.
When you raise dryland cotton, one of the only things you control is input costs. Reduce your seed costs by as much as 75% without sacrificing yield potential with BSD 9X cotton from Brownfield Seed and Delining. Perfectly adapted for dryland acres, BSD 9X is large seed and has excellent early season vigor and consistently yields at the top in university trials. Find out about BSD 9X by calling 806-637-6282 or visit brownfieldseed.com.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
This is Agriculture Today.
The renewable diesel boom isn't just changing what we put in our gas tanks. It's changing all parts of agriculture, from the farm gate to agricultural processing and on.
Joe Jansen is a University of Illinois ag economist.
For 60 years, the soybean industry has been quietly getting better at what it does, and it can now bring oil to market that it couldn't before. Will the industry continue to adapt to a demand side that's growing more closely tied to oil than animal feed? How much further can this evolution go? We'll find out.
A near perfect segue into another conversation with Rich Nelson, chief strategist with Allendale.
So it is 100% true that, you know, if Brazil is filling the hole going into China, does that mean that we'll get some of the other customers? And that is true. But the problem is it's not going to be a one-to-one type of offset. And with that China story, last year they were 832 million bushels as far as our export to them. So do we have an export risk of, let's say, 300 million bushels? And maybe we can find a home for, let's say, 100 of that. You can make that argument. But the point is we probably have a realistic concern for U.S. exports as a total, even to selling to some minor players. We probably have a total concern that this market's looking at of maybe up to 200 million bushels. So there is a bit of concern still lasting with us.
So back to the original question, and that's opportunities in the renewable space.
It's a big question here for us. So from the general biodiesel programs that specific states have in place, as well as some of the legislation we're looking at on federal side, we, of course, can say there is going to be an increase in new crop crush ahead. No argument with that. And whether it's going to be 75 to 125 million bushels, it's probably the big question here for us. The sustainable aviation story is going to be a bit of a concern here for us. Unless we have strong U.S. legislation, which really pays the bills, we're probably not going to see that story really work out in a large picture yet. What I would suggest, though, is we do have some other foreign buyers who do buy U.S. ethanol from us, for instance, who will be increasing in their usage of biofuels. Of course, India being one issue here, which they take 10 to 20% of U.S. ethanol exports. Their new programs in place will be giving us a small outlet for maybe some additional exports. So I don't have a perfect story which fixes a lot of our U.S. supply concern, but we can say that in some areas here and there, there are some positives here.
There's not a whole lot that can be done immediately. So is it time to start focusing on 2026?
I think we can say as a positive, we can probably start suggesting some lower acreage discussions for U.S. plantings next year. I think that's reasonable. The question is going to be how much. And of course, we have seen in prior years, there's been as much as a 7 million acre drop out of corn plantings from one year to the next. Right now, we're kind of plugging in on a personal balance sheet, maybe 3 million acres, maybe up to 4 total. A lot of this, of course, does depend on farm finances when it gets down to the pedal to the metal, so to speak. One thing which we can point out is our prior years of making good money on the production side have now, we've got two and a half years of light losses from the production side. So we probably can say, at least on the acreage side, are we going to see a net decline of 4 million, maybe 4.5 this coming planting? I think that might be a reasonable discussion and maybe stabilize or give us a light increase in prices here for that next New Year picture.
It's Agriculture Today.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, I think it's really important to kind of draw that difference in what we export and what we import.
Kent Backus is Executive Director of Government Affairs with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
Most of what we produce is going to be consumed here in the domestic market. About 85% of what we produce is consumed by Americans. This is the best place in the world to sell beef, and we dominate this market. In fact, it's less than, I believe, 13% of the beef consumed in the U.S. is from an imported source. Most of what we are bringing into the United States are lean beef trimmings. We produce fat cattle. We do a fantastic job producing that. That's really where most of the cattle end up, as in feedlots. That's a really promising product. We get a lot of repeat customers because of that really good flavor that we have. But we also have strong demand for ground beef. And we don't produce enough grass-finished lean cattle here in the U.S. to meet that demand. So we import lean trimmings from places like Australia, from New Zealand, and in recent years from Brazil. That beef is combined with our fattier trimmings, and that's where you see a lot of the ground beef that ends up in restaurants and at the grocery store. But on the other side of that, Americans love our products, but, some of our cuts just don't sell as well here in the domestic market. So we really have looked all over the world as where we can sell a lot of our beef at premium prices, cuts like tongues, livers, kind of the spare parts that most Americans aren't seeking when they go to the grocery store or they go to a restaurant. We can fetch a premium in a lot of these other markets. So, case in point, tongues don't sell very well here, but they are a very hot commodity in Japan and in Mexico. And so why take a loss on that in the domestic market when we can turn a profit in an overseas market? And so that's really where you have that balance. But most of what we're going to produce is going to be consumed here. One of the reasons why we engage on trade policy is to remove those barriers that other countries have placed on our products. And here at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, that's one of the main things we do is we identify those tariff and non-tariff barriers in other countries. And we work with our government and with foreign governments to find a way to lift those barriers so that those overseas consumers can gain better access to our product. At the same time, we also work very closely with our government to make sure that any product that is coming in, any of those imported, any of that beef that's coming in from other countries, that it's up to our standards. The U.S. has the highest food safety and animal health standards in the world. We want to make sure that, that products that are coming in are not going to jeopardize that great reputation and consumer confidence that we have built for beef here in the U.S. market. We want to make sure that anybody else that's coming in is not going to upstage that. So that's really a high-level overview of trade and trade policy in itself. But what it really comes down to is how does this affect profitability? Those exports add about $400 per head, and that's really what drives a lot of value for our producers. So what we're doing is trying to find more opportunities to sell more beef, sell it at higher prices around the world, and drive more of that profitability back to producers.
Kent Backus with NCBA. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So if you go back to 1913 is when they ended tariffs. We were the richest ever from 1850. It was all tariffs. We didn't have income taxes. From 1850 to 1913.
President Donald Trump speaking from the Oval Office on Thursday to reporters about tariffs and trade.
It's about 1887. They had the Great National Tariff Act. And it was a group of people that got together because our country was so rich, they didn't know what to do with the money. We had so much money, they didn't know what to do. It was a group of very prominent people that were set up to hand out money to everybody because we were the richest we ever were. Proportionately, we were in 1887, around that time, even in 1913, we ended them in 1913. How did that work out? And then we went to the income tax system, and then we had the Depression. And by the way, a lot of people try and say that, oh, tariffs with the Depression. No, they ended in 1913, and then we went to income tax, and then in 1929 you had the Depression. And they did try and bring it back in 1931-32, but the Depression had long started, and this poor, beautiful nation was gone. It was gone. We suffered for 25 years. It took 25, 30 years to really recover from the Depression. And we don't ever want to see that happen again. The tariffs are vital to the success of this country. When I say I ended seven wars, at least half of those wars were ended because of the power of tariffs. I was able to say, well, we're not doing any business with you, or if you go into war, we're putting a big tariff on you. And all of a sudden they announced that the war was settled. I settled seven different wars, one going 31 years, look at the Congo and Rwanda. Look at that. 31 years. 10 million people dead, I got it settled. And a little bit of that one, less than in some cases, had to do with trade and had to do with tariffs. So, you know, tariffs are vital to our country. And just so you know, other countries use them on us, but I just use them a lot better. We're in a much better position. We have trillions of dollars coming into our country. If we didn't have tariffs, we would be a very poor nation. And we would be taken advantage of by every other nation in the world, friend and foe. We're not going to let that happen. And we have a very, very big case in the Supreme Court. I can only say this. Our country has a chance to be unbelievably rich again, but it can also be unbelievably poor again. If we don't win that case, our country is going to suffer so greatly, But I think we're going to have a big victory. Even if you look at the people that brought the case, they're foreign oriented. They're foreign. Countries have taken advantage of the United States for so many years. And I started with China. You know, last term, I took in hundreds of billions of dollars in tariffs from China. But when COVID came, the last thing I was going to do is we're going to tariff France and Italy and, you know, others, Spain, when they were doing so badly. But now we made a deal with the European Union where they're paying us almost $1 trillion, and they're happy to do it. You know what? They're happy. It's done. These deals are all done. I guess we'd have to unwind them. We've done deals with Japan, with South Korea. We've done deals with many countries and others to come. And if we didn't have the power, prestige, and dignity of tariffs, and I used them wisely, and people respect America again, and we've become a rich country again. The money coming in is incredible. And again, they use them on us. If we didn't have them, they would use them on us, and we would have no way to fight them. We would be a third world nation. So I think it's one of the most important cases I've ever seen go before the Supreme Court.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers. This is Agriculture Today.
Generally, I don't think anybody's surprised, given the numbers we have right now, that we have pretty docile, I wouldn't say anemic, but pretty docile grain markets. Price is not doing tremendously well.
Dr. Dan O'Brien is a Kansas State grain marketing economist.
We'll see how the final numbers come down. Particularly if the corn number softens some, that'll help a bit. But either way, we have large supplies and we'll be in a storage market heading off into the fall and then watching for whatever happens around the globe, mainly down in South America, but in Brazil in particular with regard to plantings and crop size and all that. And one thing that's pretty noticeable is that the changes in acreage in some of these countries, and in particular you see Brazil growing in terms of acreage, but also to see their yield trends. The U.S. on a year-to-year basis still has the strongest year-to-year per acre bushel changes that are occurring, but Brazil isn't far behind. A country like China that would love to grow a lot of grain to meet its export needs is trailing markedly behind, particularly for corn and for soybeans as well. So you see those changes. It seems like when you look at where the mindset of grain buyers are and on the world stage, eroded in the corn and wheat markets is a place where we're at about minimum levels. If we had a major crop shortfall, we've been waiting about 2 or 3 years to change that situation and actually have a shock to the system to where you'd actually see prices move to the higher side. However, that hasn't come for a bit of time, and it looks like right now that when you look around the globe, no major droughts on the horizon, except maybe in the EU. They've got some problems. But other than that, we're kind of at stability. We're at really surprisingly low stocks in the world wheat market. Given how soft wheat prices are, it's still surprising that we're seeing that, and maybe that's some of what's behind this hard red winter wheat export issue. And for corn, also basically sideways to moderately lower, not just abundant supplies there either. For soybeans, if anything, for on the world soybean side, it's probably because of all the price signals that have been given to the soybean market to grow beans, that we're at kind of a level place in terms of stocks used, world stocks used for beans the last 3 years, basically hovering around 30%, no major changes, no major shocks. I just think these are markets that are kind of living myopically. You know, what do I have right in front of me? When we would get to the place where we'd ever have a major drought, then this tightness would be exposed. But until that happens, hey, we'll worry about that tomorrow. I think that fair questions to ask with regard to recent trade issues, and questions being asked about whether, according to U.S. trade law, it's legal to impose tariffs on other countries for factors that are other than unfair trade. And that's a reasonable question to ask. You know, there are legal challenges going through the courts with regard to that. The administration isn't waiting for those to be resolved. They're just going forth. The second question, is it reasonable to expect that any of these countries that were dealing with regard to tariffs will have retaliatory tariffs coming back? And so far, the U.S. has been in a strong enough economic position that none of them have sought to do that. At least I haven't heard of that yet. And probably the biggest long-term question would be whether countries, if they feel coerced by a trading partner, do they take actions to rely on other sources of supply? So what actions do other countries take with regard to their response to tariffs that they might feel are fair or are unfair?
And this is Agriculture Today.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever, because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Whenever we see those white flowers at the main, closest to the main stem, whenever we watch those, they continue to move up the plant.
Mark Brown is Director of Field Services, Plains Cotton Growers.
Now, there will be some second and third position flowers as well that may confuse the issue a little bit, but if we watch that flower that's closest to the main stem, that can tell us a whole lot about the growth of that particular plant. And what we would like to see ideally is by the time we get out to around August the 20th in the Lubbock area, maybe a few days earlier than that up north and a few days later down south, then we know that year in and year out, we typically can still get enough heat unit accumulation to mature a bloom that is set on that August 20th date. And so I think that's where we're at today. As we look across these fields, even though some were rather late planted, most of these fields, as you walk out into them, they are in what we would call hard cutout, which is just, you know, less than three nodes above that white flower. And so all we've got to do is maintain the fruit that is on there and see if we can get that matured out. By and large, we're at a time point now where we've had enough heat unit accumulation that we're fairly safe from insect injury. As we see cotton that is beginning to open up now, especially in these older fields, one of the insects that we need to continue to be mindful of is the cotton aphid. And early on, we saw some colonies of these cotton aphids that were developing, and we saw some populations in some of these fields. Fortunately, the beneficial populations were also high this season and, for the most part, held off any major problems with aphid infestation. We haven't had an aphid outbreak in many years, and I don't anticipate one this year. But because of the concern with sticky cotton, that's something that we always need to keep in mind and just continue to walk the fields and especially watch for any aphid colonies that are out there. But other than that, I don't anticipate an aphid outbreak, and I think that we're in pretty good shape from an insect management standpoint. As I said, we are seeing some open bowls, and then those later maturing bowls or those uppermost bowls, we need to continue to get good heat unit accumulation on those. It takes about 850 heat units to go from a bloom to a mature open bowl. And so if we kind of project out with what we typically see in terms of heat unit accumulation, if you know, those uppermost bowls should still have time to adequately develop by about the 15th of October, and we should be in good shape on that, barring any really cold snaps that are unexpected. I might also mention right there that if we look at the nearby forecast, the forecast looks really good for cotton development. Tony, we've just had a round of rain showers out here. Still somewhat spotty, but much more widespread than we've received for the last couple of months. And so most people were blessed with rainfall anywhere from a half inch to 3+ inches. And a lot of people received around an inch or an inch and a half of rain, which will help move this crop several days down the road. And then we are looking at a warm, not excessive, but a warm temperature regime for this week, and along with some probability of some good rain chances this coming weekend.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.